This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. This is Michelle and you're listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. Now, here on Stand Up Straight, I aim to provide a vehicle for the straight and allied supporters to stand up for our GLBTI community. Most importantly, to encourage and create greater inclusion. We want to share stories, give advice, create dialogue, and even introduce a new way of thinking. But most importantly, and this is the key, facilitate change toward a greater acceptance of our rainbow family in all its shapes and sizes. Tonight, guys, our program is about Ate the Play, which is a very, very special part of my life. And it was part of the Midsummer Festival 2013 this year. We've got some fabulous guests that are joining us tonight. We have Elaine Wright, who played Chris in Ate the Play. We have Damien Jones, who played Theodore B. Olsen in Ate the Play. And another young chap called Stephen Barber, who was the co-producer and director of Ate the Play. I have my guest co-host again today with me, but she's wearing a slightly different hat.
That's me.
This is Sarah. Hi, again. Hi. And her hat today that she's wearing is she's going to be the political Prop 8 correspondent.
Do you, Chris, take Sandy to be your lawfully wedded wife, to love and cherish from this day forward?
I do.
And do you, Sandy, take Chris to be your lawfully wedded wife, to love and cherish from this day forward?
I do.
Let the rings exchanged and the vows declared symbolize your commitment, sincerity, and affection. And may your love never falter. By virtue of the power and authority vested in me by the state of California, I now declare you spouses for life.
That fantastic audio is audio of Kamala Harris, who is the Attorney General of California, marrying two of the plaintiffs who were involved in the court case behind Ate the Play from the fantastic Rachel Maddow show on MSNBC in the States. So before we jump into talking about the play, I just wanted to give a bit of a primer for people about what Proposition 8 is all about.
Yeah, thank you. You're the techie political person, so you're the other half of my brain.
Yes, I'm resident nerd.
Okay. Tell us.
So to get a real picture of Prop 8 and the trial at the centre of the play, I actually want us to cast our minds all the way back to January 2000, when if you were a same-sex couple in California, the law said you couldn't get married in California, but if you could get yourself married elsewhere, then California had to recognise that marriage. Mm. So at the time, it wasn't actually possible to get yourself gay married anywhere on the planet, but it was a new century and times they were changing, and soon enough you would be able to get married in crazy places like the Netherlands. And that was enough to get a bunch of people pretty nervous in California, including a state senator called Pete Knight. And they decided they needed to get together and close the loophole in the law. So in California, if you want to make a law, as in with the whole of the US, there are two routes that you can take. One, if you're a state senator, is to get a bill into the legislature and have all of your senator friends and your assemblyman friends vote in favour of it. But Senator Knight and his friends decided to go with option number two, and that means getting together enough signatures on a petition to get a question on the ballot paper so that when you go in to answer the question, who do you want to be governor next, or do you want to re-elect Senator Knight, you also get asked, do you want there to be an act that effectively says in California the only marriages that we will recognise involve two people, one of whom is a dude and one of whom is a lady. And that was called Proposition 22. And so in March 2000, Proposition 22 passes, surprise, surprise, and if you're gay, that's it for you in California if you want to get married. So a bunch of same-sex couples trudge off to court to argue that that new act goes against the California Constitution and all its rules about things like equality and discrimination. And the court agrees and Proposition 22 is dead. But right away, the opponents of marriage equality are up and ready and running again with a new proposition, Proposition 8, our old friend. And they basically said, if the court says the California Constitution is the problem, we'll change the California Constitution. So that question went on the ballot along with, do you want Senator Obama to become president? And whilst he became president, unfortunately, Proposition 8 passed. And again, if you're a same-sex couple in California who didn't get married in that tiny window, you're done for. And again, a bunch of same-sex couples trudge off to court. In this case, we've got two couples, one of whom you just heard getting married. So we've given away the game a bit on how the story ends. But they trudged off to US District Court, and the transcripts of that trial are what Dustin Lance Black used to write the play. Because originally, the trial was going to be broadcast live on TV, but anti-gay marriage lawyers managed to make that not happen. And so Dustin Lance Black has brought us another great way to actually experience that court case. So what they were arguing at the time was that newly changed California Constitution goes against the US Constitution, which is effectively the king of all laws in the US. And that court agreed. And now the Supreme Court has also said, we're not going to disagree with that court. And so as of June 26, same-sex couples can get married once more in California. And Sandy and Chris, who you just heard, were the first ones to get married after that change in the law. So that's your intro to Prop 8, and that brings us back, I suppose, full circle to the play that we are going to be chatting about.
It does. Thanks, Sarah. That's the sort of information I think that a lot of people wouldn't be aware of, and it's important for them to hear, I think important for people to hear both sides. Mm-hmm. You eloquently put it out there. It certainly is not something that I'm au fait with as much as you are, so I really appreciate that.
No worries.
So my involvement with 8 was as a co-producer, and I spoke a little bit about it last week and our involvement. But what I wanted to talk about, in view of the fact that Stand Up Straight is from a straight perspective, and what I believed that we were doing with putting 8 on was something that I think in your life you don't always get an opportunity to, in fact, very rarely do you get an opportunity, and it might sound a bit dramatic, but we were given an opportunity to make a change and to bring 8 to the general public. Mm-hmm. It was the first non-professional production in Australia, so that was a really big thing. It was a bit of a weight on our shoulders as well, I think. Don't you think we all have things in our lives sometimes where once you've opened that door and you've got some knowledge, you feel almost obliged to walk through that door and to do whatever you can to change? That's what 8 was. It was new people, new opportunity. We had a chance to make a change, and we were compelled and to dive in. Now, part of me wanted to be able to provide a better future. This sounds perhaps a bit corny, but for me, I saw this as an opportunity to create a better life for my son, to provide a better future for him, for his community, for our rainbow community, and I do consider myself part of that. Mm-hmm. The S on the S of the GLBTIQ. I wanted to make his life better, and for him to be given the same opportunities as what I have and what we take for granted as straight people. This is the most important thing that we could possibly do as parents of a gay son and as part of this community. So, as I said, you can't close the door once you've got that opportunity given to you. We wanted to provide hope, support, and marriage equality must be for all. It is as simple as that. And that's what just kept coming through. In this cast of 21, we had a massive cross-section of people, old, young, gay, straight, different religions. And it was the best. I think really we had a melting pot of people that everyone sort of had an opinion, but their opinions either changed or it was embellished, or they became educated on parts of society that they didn't even know existed. Mm. So all of a sudden you've got people at rehearsals, as I touched on last week, talking about the discussion they had with their neighbour or someone at work or their family. They were embracing the change. We had people come to see the play that were part of the theatre that we've known in non-professional theatre, that would never have come to see a play like this in a pink fit.
Mm.
But they've walked in the doors and all of a sudden I'm thinking, yay, now I can educate them. Now they're going to see, you know, they're going to see the truth. They're going to see all these things that I'm passionate about. And I think we really did that. I don't know. I hope that we did.
Yeah, and I mean, if nothing else, I know that you guys educated yourselves more, and it's become the start of massive change in life.
Absolutely, in a lot of ways.
That even brings you, you know, into a radio station and having your own show in a weird way.
You're spot on. I wouldn't be sitting in front of this microphone now if I had not done Eight. Yep. And I absolutely believe this with every core of my being. If I did not get involved in that, I would not have. I listened to Joy a little bit, but I didn't know about Joy. I didn't know about Minus 18. I didn't know about the Enough campaign, which were the three organisations that the profit was given to for Eight. That just would not happen. I would not be sitting here if it was not for that experience. And that's, again, not everyone feels the same way, but I'm very, very, you can probably hear, I firmly believe there are things put in your path. That is what Eight did for me. I had conversations with people at work that had never ever talked about any kind of gay topic, anything at all. There was a lady that works with me, a young girl that has a 19-year-old son. She went home one night and said to her parents, "What would you think if so-and-so, her brother, what if he came home and told you he was gay?" Now, that had never been discussed in their house. Now, what kind of dialogue's that creating? That's amazing. And she couldn't wait to come back to me the next day and say, "I talked to my parents about this. This was never, ever, ever on their radar."
Absolutely.
I mean, that is what we want. This is what we want. We want to create dialogue and change. That is, it's as fundamental as that.
Exactly. So during the course of the show tonight, we're going to hear some of those stories from some of the people who were involved in the show with you, starting off with Stephen, your lovely husband and co-producer.
Yes. One of the things that I'm most proud of is that we put something on that could potentially have the biggest impact on my son's life.
Absolutely.
And I'm not just proud of what we did, what we produced, but I am proud that I can say that maybe I've made a change in his life. And to have a son that is so proud of his parents is beyond words. I have no words for that. And the gift that I have to give him is to put a program on like this and to have produced a play. And I just hope that I can have some other parents feel the same way that I have, either if it's not now, if it's eventually. I want them to know that just to love their child, love the person that they work with, love whoever they are involved with that's in the GLBTI community, and just support them.
What's your relationship to the Traditional Family Coalition?
I am the Executive Director of Traditional Family Coalition.
All right, this is an email that you wrote on May 15th, 2008. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And this was something that you were putting out in order to convince people to vote for Proposition 8. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then the last sentence says, if sexual orientation is characterized as a civil right, then so would pedophilia, polygamy, and incest. Do you agree with that, sir?
Yes, I agree.
Let me go down to point four, where you say that countries that legalized same-sex marriage saw alarming moral decline. You believe that after the Netherlands legalized same-sex marriage, the Netherlands went on after that to legalize incest and polygamy and... I mean, who told you that, sir?
It's in the internet.
Don't you just love that? Is that not insane? Absolutely insane. The reason I've used that as a bit of an intro is to make some of the people out there realise that how crazy people are and how what lengths they will go to get their point across. And that is why I open with that. Now, the reason also is to put a little bit of levity in the room and to introduce to the listeners out there a young man called Stephen Barber. Now, he is the co-producer of Eight the Play, and he's also the director. And over and above everything else, he's actually my husband, you may or may not have gathered. So welcome, Stephen, to Joy.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for being in here. This is an unusual situation, so I'm not sure what direction it's going to take. So I will put my interviewer hat on.
Sure.
Stephen, why Eight? Why the play?
Believe it or not, it was my nagging wife. she actually kept on at me to get tickets for this show, Eight, which I knew nothing about. So during the day, one day at home, I actually researched it on the internet, came up with the Broadway production, was blown away. So off we went to Eight at Her Majesty's, and in the back of the folder it said, if you'd like to put on a production of Eight the Play, please contact Broadway Impact. So
how long did it take us?
About 3 seconds, I think,
to decide.
We said, why not? So after after about, I think it was about a 2-3 month build-up, we actually contacted Broadway Impact via email and put in our request. And then it was actually interviews and submission-based. One of the stipulations of the play was that it had to be done as a fundraiser, which we certainly didn't have any issues. But I like the content, the fact that my son is gay, who I love to bits. It was just a matter of if we could have a positive impact on his life, that was the most important thing.
I agree. And that is perhaps the theme of the evening. That's the aim of our show, is to be able to do what we can for our family and friends in the GLBTI community. Can I ask you what the biggest challenge was putting it on? I know it's massive. I know it was massive.
Certainly. I think the biggest challenges were, one, actually finding the actors, because we actually come from a non-professional background. Males are in very short supply in that arena. And actually, there's 21 people in the cast.
How did you get 21 people
to audition? we actually got more than 21 people. I started spreading the word about what we were doing, why we were doing it, and people wanted to get on board.
Why do you think they wanted to get on board? Had they researched the play, do you think, or was it on people's radar?
Your magnetic personality, perhaps.
Thank you. I knew she was in the room for this reason.
I also carry a baseball bat. it was primarily the fact that we were so passionate about what we were delivering. Some people did know about what we were talking about, but one of the things that we wanted to do was we wanted the people who are actually a part of this show to actually feel like a part of the family as well. One of my methods in my madness in rehearsals was that I wanted people there early. Now, people would buck up and say, well, I'm not coming at 7:30 if we're not going to start till 8 o'clock. When they actually got to Chapel off Chapel and there was 21 actors crammed into a room that's about the size of a shoebox, they understood the method in my madness. I wanted people to be comfortable with each other and they had to know each other fairly well. So, and it was self-evident in the production.
Did you have any professional actors or were they all from the non-professional field?
I'm glad to say everyone was from the non-professional field, and the passion shone through in what was delivered.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely. Were there challenges in putting it on? I know with a big cast, I know, so was there a challenge? Did everyone get on well?
They did. One of the things that we actually had was we had people from all walks of life. For 21 actors, there were only 5 that were from the GLBTQI community. We had people from different religions, different age levels, and it was quite interesting. There were a couple of people that we're quite close with that I guess their religious beliefs were in conflict with actually doing a part of the show. And what they wanted to do was they actually wanted to be involved with us because they felt that we were empowering people and changing people's lives.
Yeah. And I think that we found that ourselves. Did you, halfway through the rehearsal process, from the beginning to halfway through, was it what you thought it would be?
It was difficult to gauge because having 21 actors and people with other commitments actually trying to get 21 people in the room at one time was almost impossible. I think it was three nights before we went on, we actually had a full cast. So that was one of the challenges. But there are a lot of little things that go with it. Where do you get rehearsal space? Were we going to get the theatre space? You know, these were all things that we hadn't delved into. We've done some one-act plays and bits and pieces, been involved in theatre for a long time, but this one we really sort of stuck our toe in and fell in the deep end.
Yeah, how steep was the learning curve? Was it right up? I think it was right up.
It was vertical.
It was very vertical learning curve, yeah. Would you say there was a downside to it at all? Was there something that you thought, well, I really shouldn't do this? Is there anything that you would have done differently?
Didn't go longer. Didn't go long enough. One of the stipulations with the play is you can only do 1-3 nights, and if you want to resubmit, you actually have to have another proposal in place. So we pushed for the 3 nights maximum, which was great that we actually got granted. And look, since we've actually been and we've met up with the people from Broadway Impact, and as we like to say, we're a million miles away from where the action was actually happening, but we believe that we just pushed it over the edge.
That's right. We had a little bit of something to do with the change.
I don't want to draw people's criticism. In fact, quite the opposite. I would really like people to like me. I would. So So since I know I have this trait that I can't change, that people don't like, I go to great lengths to develop other traits that people will like. So I put a significant amount of time and energy into being, well, likable. So that when discriminatory things happen, maybe I can turn it around. The decision every day to come out or not at work, at home, at PTA, at music, at soccer, it's exhausting. If we're at a store and people want to know if we're sisters or cousins or friends, and I have to decide every day if I want to come out everywhere I go and take the chance that somebody will have a hostile reaction, or just go there and buy the microwave we went there to buy without having to go through all that again.
That was Chris Perry, and that was played with in our Australian version of Ate the Play by Elaine. Hi.
I believe, Your Honor, that there is a political tide turning. I think that people's eyes are being opened, finally. People are becoming more understanding and tolerant. The polls tell us that. There isn't any secret in that. But that does not justify a judge in a court to say, I really need the polls to be just a few inches higher. I need someone to go out and take the temperature of the American public before I can break this barrier and break down this discrimination. Because if they change it here in the next election in California, we still have Utah, we still have Missouri, and we still have Montana. This case is going to go to a court. Some judge is going to have to decide what we've asked you to decide. And you have to have a reason, Your Honor. And you have to have a reason that's real. Not speculation, not built on stereotypes, and not hypothetical. That's what the Supreme Court decision tells us. And I submit, at the end of the day, I don't know, and I don't have to put on any evidence. With all due respect to Mr. Cooper, does not cut it. It does not cut it when you're taking away the constitutional rights, basic human rights and human decency from a large group of individuals. You cannot say after the fact, we are going to take away the constitutional right to liberty, privacy, association, and sexual intimacy that we already tell you you have. That is not acceptable. It is not acceptable under our Constitution, and Mr. Blankenhorn is absolutely right. The day we end that, we will be more American.
Wow, that was the dynamic Theodore B. Olsen that was played by Damien in our production of Ate the Play.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Damien.
What wonderful memories there are in that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we're all sitting here going, oh, was it that long ago? Yeah, we want to go back and do it again. So thank you guys very much for joining me, part of our Eight family. Can I ask you, Elaine, firstly, what made you audition for the production?
I'd probably be telling lies if I said that it was the issue that dragged me in first. I'd just been in a play with you too, and I thought, oh, that'll be fun. I'd like to do that again. And before I even got the script, Stephen sent me the link for the YouTube film, and I was thinking, how on earth are they going to make a court case where it's actual transcript interesting? And I was captured immediately. I watched the whole thing in one setting. And then we got the script, and suddenly I thought, this isn't just going to be fun. This is probably going to be the most important play I've ever been in, and I think that has borne out to be the case.
Yeah, I agree, and I think we found that with a lot of people as well. Did you have a highlight of the production? I know that's a big question.
Actually, putting it on, I mean, we had a really good time in rehearsal, and I think you captured before the growing commitment of the cast, and that was really obvious. When we started, we were just having read-throughs and it seemed to go really well, but then people were trying to put more into it and trying to make connections. Yeah. But then when we came to Chapel on Chapel, it was just... it was beyond my expectations.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure too how the discussion at the end was going to go, but it really completed the package. It was entertaining, it was gripping, it was eye-opening. Yeah, so being actually at Chapel on Chapel was the highlight for me.
Stephen, just on that very quickly, there was a forum after each...
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think because of the passionate drive behind what we did through a serendipitous phone call, my wife, who is a bit of a joy stalker, actually decided to call Dean Beck after his show and ask him if he would actually host the forum. For people who may not know, the show was done in two parts. There was actually the reading, and then there was a forum afterwards. We decided not to make our forum about marriage equality, but about equality for everybody. And Dean Beck was kind enough to host, and for for the lineup he gave us, and the lovely Matt Thompson was also our mic man, and it really worked well. And I actually gained a lot of knowledge, and I think for me that is what started me on the journey that I'm on.
Thank you. Well, we've got a bit more information about the podcasts that are available as well for people that want to listen to those amazing forums. Damien, what was the biggest challenge with your character? Well, it's not a character, really, is he?
No, look, it was a real person, which was fascinating from an acting perspective. Self and you are playing characters that have just been made up on the page. They are a playwright's invention. This was a real character, a highly credentialed and experienced constitutional lawyer dealing with a very complex and difficult issues. So I spent a lot of time not reading the script, actually going away and seeing what Teddy Olsen had written about, and when he'd spoken to the press, the kind of things that he'd spoken about. So I did a lot of research on the character. Then I went back to the script and really tried to tease out the legal argument. The words for Olsen are extremely complicated. The message is difficult for the audience to understand. So I had to make sure I understood it really clearly before I could convey it to the audience. So that was the challenge for me.
Can I say, forget the fact that I'm a co-producer, but as an audience member, the room was silent when you spoke. And I think that was really evident. And that's why I chose that particular grab, because it always has, it just rings true for me and Elaine's role as Chris Perry, that I have to decide to come out every day. That just is so monumental, I think.
Yeah, look, I actually found, I listened to Charlie Martin Sheen. And
Charlie Sheen,
Father Martin.
That'd be a different play.
It would be. I listened to Martin Sheen, and it sounds a bit conceited, but I actually didn't think he understood the argument well enough, and I didn't listen to it again. I went back and pulled it apart myself until I really understood it.
Yeah.
And I think that just made a big difference from my perspective.
Just really quickly, did you audition for the play in a traditional sense? How did you come by?
Look, it was fascinating. I was actually working at a barbecue with Stephen when he started telling me about Eight and this project.
Do you mean browbeating? Probably.
No, we were cooking sausages. But he told me about this wonderful piece and I didn't know anything about it. And I went home and told Angela, my wife, and she said, oh, yeah, Proposition 8. Yeah, I know all about that. And I thought, hang on, how do you know all this? And she explained it all to me. And I thought, gee, it sounds interesting.
Did you feel obliged at that point? Did you think, well, if they know, I've got to learn about it, I've got to get involved?
Well, it challenged me a bit because I knew nothing, absolutely nothing. But I'd forgotten when the auditions were, and I just happened to be at the theatre helping somebody unload set when you and Stephen walked out the door and said, oh, you're auditioning. I thought, oh, my God, I forgot. So I walked up and read it sight unseen, but the words were there on the page. Yeah, it was terrific.
Yeah, I have to say it completed us, I think, when Damien auditioned. Can I ask you how it impacted on you, perhaps during and after? Has it had an impact on you, being involved?
It did have. A lot of time spent, as I say, understanding the legal argument and understanding how the Californian Constitution had been changed by this Proposition 8 to restrict the rights of people. And my wife, Angela, very broad-minded, very lateral thinking, very open-minded, was of the view that this was certainly very wrong. I also have a 19 and a 17-year-old, 19-year-old son, 17-year-old daughter, who are at that age when they are exploring all sorts of issues and have gay friends and are dealing with all sorts of issues around the community in which they live. So it generated a whole heap of conversations around that in the lead-up. And then after they'd seen the performance, we actually didn't go into the forum afterwards. We were still sitting in the foyer discussing it for another hour afterwards. Wow. So it just generated all this wonderful discussion.
Yeah.
And it's continued today. It's actually, I watched online the two marriages which took place after the change in the American law a couple of weeks ago. And it just was so moving. I thought, this is right. How did we as a community not allow this to happen for so long?
I agree. Elaine, you've got a son or daughter as well?
Yes.
A bit younger. Did they understand what you were doing?
They did. And like Damien, it brought the issue front and centre into our home.
So how do you broach it with your kids? Did they ask you?
It's probably something that we'd broached before, just with like most parents of children at primary school, you hear homophobic language and you deal with that. And we'd certainly heard the word gay being bandied about before. And so we'd spoken about the issue. When I was in the play, they certainly wanted to know more. The about the fact that I was playing a lesbian. My son outed me to my sister in New Zealand. On the phone, she rang one Saturday and William said, "Mum's playing a lesbian." No, "Mum's a lesbian." And then he had to explain why.
That's a great conversation.
It was good. And my sister was going, "Wow, that's really amazing that he would say that." And this is how it all starts. This is how change starts, is that you discuss it with your family at this age. And they came to the forum on the Friday night, and we weren't sure whether they would be able to cope with the conversation, but they were both, my 13-year-old daughter in particular, really captured by the speakers. We talked a lot afterwards in the weeks following. I was kind of sad that they didn't come to all of the forums, because there were some really engaging speakers every night. But one of the issues, for instance, that really surprised them and we talked at length about was the chap, he was for the HIV survivors.
Brent Allen.
Thanks, yeah. And they hadn't realised, or we hadn't realised as a family, that HIV sufferers can experience some discrimination at hospitals and sometimes be turned away or not given treatment they deserve. And that was an eye-opener and quite shocking to us all, and brought about a bit of discussion in our family.
Were you able to have open and frank discussions with your kids? And did you know, did they talk about it with their friends at school, what their mum was doing or anything like that? Do you know?
I'm not sure if they spoke about the play, but certainly speaking about homosexuality and identifying one's sexuality is becoming more important in both their lives. Michelle, you know the postscript to the story, and I did warn my son that I might mention it. After all of the really earnest discussion we had and the head nodding at how wrong it is to judge people on their sexuality, at the very recent parent interviews, it was revealed that my son upset a friend in an argument by calling him a gaybo. And Stu and I were absolutely flabbergasted, because I think that we had sort of slightly felt that, having dealt with the issue at the beginning of the year, it was now understood and there would never be another problem, and patted ourselves on the back. So we were stunned and appalled. We couldn't say anything on the way home from the interview, and my son scuttled up to his room because he knew he was really in for trouble. If we were speechless, he was in for trouble. And he confessed to his elder sister that in using that word, he had no way intended it to be about gays. Mm. He was just looking for something mean to say. And that's brought about further discussion, that you can't use those words.
Out of bad comes good. Really?
Yeah, because we're having the discussion all over again.
We have only got a couple more minutes. I wish we had another hour. Damien, one question I want to ask you. What's happened since 8? Is there anything particular, anything you wanted to discuss?
Yeah, look, my wife died in the period since completing 8, which was not unexpected, but still sad along the way. But it actually caused me to reflect very heavily on what's important in marriage. Mm-hmm. And whilst 8 was around marriage and I could understand it intellectually, what the issues were that we were dealing with, it caused me to think very carefully about what was good about my own marriage and what is good about other people's marriages that I see. And the end result was that I came up with this theory of what I call resonance, harmonic resonance between people that are in a relationship. And you see great marriages where the two people are just in harmony with each other. And that is such a wonderful thing. That is such a wonderfully precious thing. And it's not gender specific. It's not who you're sexually attracted to. It is the quality of your relationship. And it just dawned on me that we've had a whole group of people who've had wonderfully harmonic relationships who have been denied the rights of other people in the community on the basis of their sexual orientation. And it just, the penny dropped. It just absolutely dropped. So that's the big thing for me.
I could not have summed up a program any better than that. Elaine and Damien, I would love to have you on again another time. I really appreciate your time. You've been beautiful guests and dear, very, very dear friends. You have been listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
As we go out, we're just going to hear the second of the two weddings. So this is the vows and the ring exchange, also from the Rachel Maddow Show on MSNBC, of the two gentlemen who were also plaintiffs in the Prop 8. Thanks for
Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye. So, Paul, you take Jeff to be your lawful wedded spouse.
I do.
Jeff, you take Paul to be your lawful wedded spouse.
I do.
Do you each promise to love and comfort one another? to honor and keep one another in sickness and in health, in prosperity and adversity, and forsaking all others, be faithful to each other as long as you both shall live.
We do.
I don't know about you, but I got goosebumps. Now, the wedding ring is an outward and visible sign of an inward and spiritual bond, which unites two loyal hearts in endless love. Paul, please place this ring on Jeff's left finger and repeat after me. I, Paul, offer this ring as a symbol of my love and devotion.
Offer this ring as a symbol of my love and my devotion.
Let it always be a reminder of my vows to you.
Let it always be a reminder of my vows to you.
Jeff, place this ring on Paul's left finger and repeat after me. I, Jeff, offer this ring as a symbol of my love and devotion.
Offer this ring as a symbol of my love and devotion.
Let it always be a reminder of my vows to you.
Let it always be a reminder of my vows to you.
And so, on behalf of the state of California, let me pronounce you married.
Paul Kitami and Jeff Zerillo, now legally married in the state of California. Mazel tov.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.